So we could continue discussing this case, but let's go on, and now we're going to move to Hollywood, Florida. The patient's a 67-year-old man who was found to have widespread adenopathy and had an external iliac node biopsy that showed grade 1, 2, FL. Dr. Laban, can you comment on this patient?
He presented to another oncologist, and he came to us actually after his recurrence that was documented by a PET scan. His first oncologist gave him two cycles of rituximab and CVP. And when he came to us, we repeated his PET scan, and there was a partial response to the two cycles of rituximab and CVP. And that was at the same time when the research of Dr. Rummel and colleague was coming out, so we decided to give him bendamustine and rituximab. We chose the 90 milligrams day one and day two dose, and he tolerated the treatment very well every 28 days. And we repeated his PET scan after four cycles, and he did show complete remission at that time. Then we followed that with two more cycles, and then we started maintenance rituximab. He did receive two doses of that, and he's coming next week to receive the third dose of the maintenance rituximab. He was doing well, no problems, no complications. All the treatments were given on time.
And any questions you'd like to see the faculty address about this case, Dr. Laban?
I would like to ask Dr. Gregory, what's her opinion about consolidation with either immunochemotherapy or stem cell transplant at this point, or should we just continue with the maintenance rituximab?
So before Stephanie gets into some of the data that relates to the case, any issues or questions in the faculty, particularly what you might be thinking as time moves on, Dave? Dr. Laban brought up the issue of transplant, of consolidation. How would you be thinking this through at this point?
Well, I certainly agree that I'm concerned about this gentleman because he relapsed so quickly after FMR chemotherapy and maintenance rituximab. Within a year, that's when I generally get really concerned about patients that they're not going to have a prolonged remission with standard therapy. So I would probably be trying to consolidate this gentleman with an autologous transplant using an experimental approach, such as radiolabeled antibodies or some such thing like that.
Like now?
Yeah, I would collect stem cells and consider doing that now. Now, if he's truly in a complete remission, you could collect stem cells potentially and watch really carefully. And if he did start to progress, consider doing a transplant at that point. That would give him the benefit of his second remission. But I usually use a cutoff of about a year. If you relapse within a year of good therapy with follicular lymphoma, you're on the short end of the stick, and I think that's where you should consider other treatment possibilities.
Jonathan, what would you have been thinking, you know, if this patient transferred into you the way the patient transferred into Dr. Laban, having just gotten two cycles of RCVP?
I agree with David. First thing I always would be a little bit concerned about, again, is the diagnosis. And I think that potentially considering a second biopsy, acknowledging the difficult location is important, because if you had seen evidence of transformation, which this very well could be in 1 year remission interval, you might choose a different regimen, such as an anthracycline-containing regimen. I think the second thought is, again, I would say that what was done was correct and that a decision was made that the CVP wasn't accomplishing what you'd want to accomplish. I think even upping the ante from what David said is not only was this a short remission after good induction therapy, but it was a short remission that failed on rituximab maintenance. So the thought that now rituximab maintenance is likely to hold this patient for a meaningful period of time, I think, is limited. And for that reason, I would be heavily considering an autologous transplant, taking advantage of the current remission.
I'm going to ask in a minute Dr. Laban if he has any thoughts or questions. But before I do, Myron, you had a question?
Just curious that the patient apparently had a PET scan a year and a half after follow-up. And I'm just curious as to, I think more the standard would have been CAT scans and reserving a PET scan potentially if we wanted to potentially go to curative therapy, et cetera, before you start another therapy. And the question that comes up, even though I'm concerned as David is and the rest of the panel, this patient has what sounds like asymptomatic disease, non-bulky disease, and I'm concerned they're not responding, but I'm wondering if we just held off and monitored how quickly this disease is coming back, would the patient be able to be monitored on a watch and wait basis for a while at this point?
Dr. LeBon, any questions or comments about what's transpired so far?
I was just going to ask, how common do they see the recurrence in a different location from the primary presentation?
Different location. Matthias, how uncommon or common is that?
So usually when we only recommend to monitor the initial site of the disease, this is not enough because these lymphomas can appear in the relapsed disease situation everywhere. So I would also do a CAT scan of the body in order to follow up if this is decisive for my treatment decisions. And I also agree with Myron Tschutschmann that the PET scan, at least in Germany, is absolutely not very often used. And I really do not know the role of PET scan in this disease. And I would certainly not make my treatment decision according on a PET scan. So I also would like to know if you could initially watch and wait the patient. However, I also agree that after such a short remission duration, there is a lot of things to concern.
So just quick comment from Dr. Svakanaki. What do you think about this discussion in terms of whether PET scan is useful in this situation?
I think the decision to treat the patient based on the PET scan findings is one issue, and the other issue is the best way to detect it. And the PET CT scan is routinely used here in the United States as the single best non-invasive test to detect metabolically active disease because it will give you both the anatomy and the metabolism. So in this case, with one test, rather than a CT neck, chest, abdomen, and pelvis, we were able to detect the site of disease and also image it anatomically with the CT fusion portion of the study. Whether or not this needs to guide treatment has to do more, I believe, with the symptomatology of the patient at that time. But I think it is the best way to detect residual or recurrent hypermetabolic tumor.
Interesting dialogue and perspectives going back and forth here, huh, Stephanie?
Could I just make a comment that I think if we really get into the PET issue in follicular lymphoma, we'll never get through the other five cases because I think it is still very controversial and it is not considered part of our evaluation in follicular lymphomas at this point.
All right.
I think we should end it at that point.
Okay, it's done. Dave, one of the questions that comes up, how old for transplant, but we asked our audience here, what about transplant and age? What's the oldest you would consider, assuming the patient's in perfectly good performance status, you know, no comorbidities? Looks like Dave around 65, maybe 70. How do you all approach it?
Well, I think you have to think about what kind of transplant are you talking about. So autologous stem cell transplants will probably go up to age 70 or maybe a little older for myeloma anyway. For lymphoma, probably about 70. Using a non-myeloablative conditioning regimen and an allogeneic transplant will actually go up into the mid-70s. So I think about the oldest patient I can remember was 76 who had mantle cell. And this is an outpatient transplant. So it's a different approach. I just think you need to remember that the graft versus tumor effects can provide a potentially curative therapy for patients with indolent lymphomas, but it's at a cost and it's at a significant risk of mortality and morbidity. So I actually don't do that early, an allo transplant, but I would do an auto transplant early. So those are the types of how I'd look at this.
Matthias?
Just for this question of the age of the patients eligible for transplantation, in Germany at least, we don't look so exactly for the number of years. However, for the cumulative illness rating scale, which means a comorbidity index, so certainly you have some patients who are 60 years old and you won't transplant them, and some patients 75, you don't have any question that you immediately would recommend such a thing. So I would say in the future we should go away from these exact numbers.
Jonathan, Stephanie was talking about the work looking at bortezomib, lenalidomide, on other novel agents and approaches in relapsed FL. We asked the audience, have you used these agents? And a lot of people have used bendamustine, but there is some use, I assume this is outside a protocol setting, of lenalidomide and bortezomib. What are your thoughts about using these agents outside a protocol setting of the relapsed FL, Jonathan?
Well, I think both agents have shown activity in fairly large studies. Bortezomib has been around a bit longer. I think lenalidomide might be the more promising of the two as far as durability and tolerance, durability of the response and tolerance of the agent. I have used both of those on occasion in patients with follicular lymphoma as well as other histologies of lymphoma. I think that bortezomib has a label in lymphoid malignancies. Lenalidomide will likely get one. So I expect we'll see more of them. I think, like many other things, though, understanding the right place to put them, as well as what combinations are the most viable, are going to require further study.
And I want to go back for some closing thoughts from the tumor board itself. Dr. Laban, this was your patient, and also Atif Hussain, you organized this tumor board. Whether either one of you have any questions or issues you'd like to see, Atif, anything you want to bring up to the faculty?
Yeah, I mean, the issue of the consolidation is really very important in these patients, and I would like to ask them what they would prefer, an autologous transplant or radioimmunotherapy, especially Stephanie. And are there studies addressing this question in the U.S.?
So, Stephanie, particularly, what about consolidation and radioimmunotherapy?
Well, as you know, the consolidation trial, the FIT trial, was really done up front so that there has been really no randomized trial looking at a consolidation program with radioimmunotherapy in the relapse setting. I have to say that I have treated patients with abbreviated chemotherapy and consolidated them with radioimmunotherapy in the off-label kind of situation, but I don't do that after an extensive amount of chemotherapy. I think that we're really adding a risk of MDS to those patients. Again, I think we need to start thinking more about, we can certainly have a controversy of whether rituximab maintenance should be done or consolidate with radioimmunotherapy. I mean, the data is out there now with rituximab maintenance. We really don't have long-term follow-up of a similar thing with consolidation radiotherapy.
And in a minute, I want to ask you all, Dr. Laban, about the logistics of actually doing radioimmunotherapy. Before we do, though, Mitch, in our patterns of care studies, we have not seen much use of radioimmunotherapy in general. But in our most recent one that we just finished in the last few weeks, we hear people saying we're planning to use it more. What about the actual practical challenges of using this therapy? And, you know, I hear from a lot of investigators, quote, it's not used as much as it should be. What are your thoughts?
You know, I would agree it's not used as much as it should be. You know, I'm at a center where we can get it set up, and it's pretty easy for me to get it done. And I understand the logistics and practice are a bit different dealing with radiopharmacy, ordering, radiation safety issues, et cetera. So I think, you know, it's got approved indication in transformed follicular lymphoma. It has the indication in the FIT trial, although there are, as Dr. Rummel had said, there are some concerns because those weren't our chemo-treated patients. But I think one of the big hang-ups is logistics. And there's also a fear of MDS, and I think that's there, but it's there no matter what treatment you give. If you give a third and fourth and fifth line alkylating or fludarabine-based treatment, you're going to have some risk of MDS. So it's there, it's not perfect, and I think logistics really play into it, and if that could be overcome, it would be used more.
So we're going to come back to you all in Hollywood in a minute, but just final comment from Dr. Laban. What about the logistics in your place in doing radioimmune therapy? Easy, hard, or in between?
We actually have done over 150 treatments. Particularly for that patient, he was kind of resistant to any aggressive type of therapy, including radioimmunotherapy or transplant. That's why we decided to go with the maintenance rituximab. But it is possible, it is available, and we can do it if the patient agrees.